Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Here in San Antonio at a federal courthouse this morning, the redistricting hearings starting again, and up in Austin just yesterday at the close of one legislative session, a new one, a special session started to deal with redistricting in Texas. Redistricting, it's one of those issues, it's kind of like how do you eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time. It's a very large and sort of cumbersome issue, but it directly impacts political power in Texas, which is why so many people pay attention to it. And we're going to be talking about redistricting in Texas with our guest, Michael Lee. He is an election attorney, and he is also running the website TexasTXRedistricting.org. It's a great website. It's a great resource for anyone who's trying to figure out what's happening with redistricting here. And welcome to The Source, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
So we had a hearing today. What happened with this hearing, this federal hearing here in San Antonio?
Well, the San Antonio court is having to decide what it needs to do going forward and whether it needs to make any additional changes to the temporary maps that it put in place last March, or I guess March of 2012. And so that's what the hearing was about today.
So people may remember that it was this redistricting kerfuffle that kept pushing back the primaries for it. You know, what was it, 2011? We were having all that nonsense.
It started in 2011, and then as we got closer to 2012, people started to get really panicked, and it became a real mess because once you start delaying the primary, it affects everybody, not just the members of the legislature or Congress.
So, just to kind of go over the background, every 10 years, all states have to do redistricting based upon census population. Texas grew. We're able to have up now 36 congressional seats. We got five additional ones. Was that right?
We got four.
Four additional ones. And a lot of that growth was attributed to Latino population growth or minority population growth in Texas. And there was one of the fights was that meant that a certain number of the new districts should have gone to minority districts, right?
That's right. About 90% of the state's population gain over the last decade was either African-American or Latino, and 66% of that was Latino. And so really, if you look at it, without the African-American and Latino growth, Texas would not have picked up a single new congressional seat. Instead, we picked up four. But when it came time to draw the maps, originally the way the maps were drawn, they effectively didn't give African-Americans or Latinos a single new seat.
And then that was challenged. And so it went back and forth in the courts. And a big part of this was Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott. He was wanting to avoid going to the Justice Department and because they had authority under the Voting Rights Act. And a lot of this has to do with the Voting Rights Act. And that enters into what's happening here in San Antonio now because it looks like the federal judges are waiting to see what the Supreme Court does with the Shelby case before them, ruling whether or not the Voting Rights Act is still valid.
That's right. The Shelby County, Alabama, has challenged Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which is the provision of the Voting Rights Act that requires states with a history of discrimination like Texas and Alabama to get any new electoral changes, whether it's moving precinct polling places or redistricting maps, approved in advance. And they can do that either by going to the Justice Department in Washington, which is what people normally do, or they can do what Texas chose to do this time and go to a three-judge panel in Washington. And for whatever reason, it really appears that the Attorney General didn't want to go to the DOJ because it was controlled by the Democratic administration.
Eric Holder,
right.
So I feel like, this is really hard to walk people through this piece by piece because there's this matrix of information about this is connected to that and that influences
right.
This. But it really does come down to who is going to have political influence and political power in the state. The Republicans who control the Texas House and the legislature and the Senate are able to draw the maps, And of course, just as the Democrats did when they held authority in Austin, that they drew maps which favored their party and allowed them to elect the as many congressmen from their party as they possibly could. And that's how it works.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, for a long time, Texas had more Democratic congressmen than Republican ones, even after Texas had become a fairly Republican state. And, you know, now there are more Republican congressmen than the Republicans get as a vote share in the state. And so, you know, there's a lot of politics that go on in that. But there's also an ethnic angle in that, and which is that Texas is becoming an increasingly diverse state. And really, for the last 40 years, I mean, really, frankly, for the last 40 years, we've struggled with sort of how to accommodate that. And that was a struggle when within the Democratic Party, when the Democrats were the majority party, and it's a struggle now between the parties, now that, that a lot of the people who used to be in the Democratic Party have gone over to the Republican Party.
And so when we have these arguments and hearings like today, we frequently hear Republicans defending the map, saying these are not racially divisive. They're not looking at racial lines. They're looking, but they are politically designed to benefit their party, which is not illegal or improper. In fact, it's just how the game is played.
Well, you know, that's true at some level, but the problem with that is that Texas has very racially polarized voting.
Right, so the problem is it's very hard to tease out one from the other.
Right, and it's not an either-or, right? I mean, you could be discriminatory on the basis of both party affiliation and on the basis of ethnicity, and, you know, it's not either-or.
So we end up with these crazy-looking districts in Texas that stretch, you know, hundreds of miles, you know, and connect these communities which seemingly have nothing in common. But according to the law, aren't, you know, when you put together a district, you're supposed to be linking communities of common interest.
You're right. I mean, community of interest is, you know, that's one of those vague terms that everybody applies in their own way. But at the same time, you know, you've got districts now that stretch from just not far from the Texas Capitol, almost to Fort Worth, which is totally crazy.
And you'll also have districts that start in Austin and stretch down to the Valley. Used to be.
And you have one that stretches from Austin down to San Antonio with just a narrow 3-mile neck in between.
The I-35 district, or District 35.
That's right. The I-35 district, appropriately named, I guess, or numbered.
Yeah. So, yeah. And so people, they're wondering, why isn't that challenged?
It can be, and the Supreme Court, and, you know, raised some issues about District 35 in particular, and the San Antonio court, when it drew the temporary map, said that district, which the state drew, was, you know, a close call about whether it was legal or not, because it looked too stringy. What the Supreme Court has said, and this is why redistricting law is so messy. Supreme Court has said that, you know, obviously under the Voting Rights Act, you have to take into account ethnicity, but under some other cases, you can't draw a district solely on the basis of race. And so you've got to think about race, but not too much. And it's really hard. And so they said 35 was a close call.
And that's why lawyers like you have something to do.
We do have something to do.
Okay.
At least once a decade.
We're going to continue the conversation talking about redistricting in Texas. This is heating up again, the story that never stops giving. We want you to join the conversation. Do you even know who your congressman is? Has it changed multiple times because of redistricting? Call us 614-8980. You're listening to The Source on KSTX, and we're going to be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio, Michael Lee. He runs a website called txredistricting.org. If you're a political junkie, you need to make that site a favorite. It really breaks down what's happening with redistricting in the state, and he updates it constantly. Any new developments, any upcoming hearings, it's all there. It's a great resource for Texas and journalists across the state. And we're talking about redistricting. What a convoluted, arcane process to decide who's going to represent what area. Other states have developed better or different ways of figuring this out. But do you think, you know, as a voter, a resident of San Antonio, that we can come up with a better way to redistrict and make it more fairer for you to have representation in Austin and in Washington, D.C. The number to call to join the conversation is 614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email us your comments or questions to thesource@tpr.org. We do have a caller who wants to join us, and Nancy is on the line. Nancy, welcome to The Source.
Hi.
Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
My comment is that before I was in Mr. Canseco's district, during the primary I was able to vote for Mr. Gallego, and also during the election I was able to vote for Mr. Gallego. I went back to check to see which precinct I was in, which district I was in, before I went to an event, and I'm in Lamar Smith's district.
Do you live like near that Harlandale area?
No, actually I live near Churchill High School.
So this is what people are dealing with, Michael. So, Nancy, how does this make you feel?
Like a poor stepchild?
You feel like a political pawn?
Yes. And it's ridiculous. I figured at least if I was able to vote for the people that I would be in that district. And now all of a sudden they've changed me again in final, and I'm not in that district.
Okay, well, it's hard to develop political interest and loyalties and all those things when they keep switching you around. Nancy, thank you so much for your call. You've really helped us put an idea what this is like to the voters when they deal with this issue. Michael, any comments?
No, I mean, I think, you know, particularly in here in Bexar County, a lot of people have that same sort of feeling, because the Bexar County district seemed to get drawn and rejiggered with great regularity. You know, the same thing could be said for Travis County up in Austin, just a little bit north of here. So.
Yeah, let's talk about that. In Travis County, Austin, they say they don't even really have their own congressperson, because Austin, which has been kind of a liberal bastion for the state, was divided up like the center of a pie, so that they weren't able to have a localized congressman who would be a Democrat who could go to Washington, D.C.
That's right. Austin, back in the 2003, was divided into three parts, and now it's divided into four parts. Just a couple blocks from the Capitol, you can actually walk within a span of a couple of minutes into four different congressional districts. So it's quite amazing.
So doesn't that defy the, you know, common interest asset of figuring out how to draw a congressional district? I mean, you would think, you know, a city would have a common interest.
You would think. I mean, you know, whatever you think of Austin, whatever you think of Travis County, it is a unique area. When you're there, you know that you're there, and it's sort of the classic example of a community of interest. In fact, you know, it's the only major county in the state where Democrats get more than 50% of the Anglo vote. I mean, everywhere else it's about 35% or less. And so Travis County is unique, and yet it doesn't have its own representation.
And it's flagrantly, obviously, divided up to keep them from having a Democrat.
That's right. Well, and it's deliberately divided up to keep them from having Lloyd Doggett. So, you know.
Well, he's still... Well, he won that I-35 or District 35 district.
So Lloyd has represented many different parts of the state, and I think if he keeps staying in Congress, at some point he'll have represented all of it.
One point or another. All right, another caller wants to jump in the conversation. David, welcome to The Source.
Yeah, good afternoon. I was just going to comment also about the 23rd Congressional District, although I'm very, very happy with our current representation. I just don't see what the city of Chavano Park has in common with Alpine or any of the other areas. The 23rd Congressional District, if anything cries gerrymandering, it's that. I don't understand it at all.
All right, David, thank you for your questions and comments. What they have in common is that Congressman Pete Gallego is the guy who represents Alpine and Chavano Park in Washington, D.C.
That's right. And you know, the thing to remember is that, you know, the 23rd is gigantic. And when you look at it on a map, you say, how could that possibly be? It runs from Bexar County all the way to El Paso. But the reality is, you know, the parts in the middle aren't very populated. And so Almost 40% of the population of the district actually does live in Bexar County. So it is a Bexar anchor district, despite the fact that it looks kind of crazy.
But also covers a big chunk of southwest San Antonio.
It does.
Which is, has a lot of its economic challenges. This is a seat that's gone back and forth. The 23rd Congressional District, Sergio Rodriguez, and then we had Henry Bonilla, Albert Bustamante, then Henry Bonilla, then Sergio Rodriguez, then it was we had Canseco,
yes.
Kiko Canseco, and now it was Pete Gallegos. So it swung back and forth.
It is, and the 23rd is actually the subject of one of the more interesting maneuvers in the last round of redistricting. What the state did, what the Republicans in the legislature did, is they took out Hispanics from places like Bexar County and substituted in Hispanics in other parts of the state, in more rural counties who didn't vote. So, and that really bothered the court when they reviewed it, because what they did is they created a district that looked more Hispanic but actually was less likely to elect the Hispanic candidate of choice.
So they're using data mining at a very high level, and they're able to target blocks of neighborhoods and figure out, is this a high turnout neighborhood or a low turnout neighborhood? And deliberately, as they create the district, they cobble it together in this process using computers. They say, okay, this is a neighborhood that doesn't really vote a lot, and let's put that in this neighborhood and into the district because it will increase our chances to elect a Republican.
That's right. I mean, the level of data sophistication is amazing nowadays.
So what about having a nonpartisan commission or another way to redistrict in Texas? I know that when we had Texas Senator Jeff Wentworth, he was a big proponent of having a nonpartisan way of creating districts.
He was, and he actually got it out of the Senate a few times, and it died in the House. It's hard to do that without people kind of thinking about the electoral consequences, which you talked about earlier. I think a lot of people favor it. It used to be, as Jeff likes to say, it used to be all the Republicans who were in favor of it and the Democrats who were opposed, and now it's vice versa.
It depends on whose ox is getting gored at the time.
That's right. That's right. But, the bills keep getting filed. None of them got heard this session. But, at some point, a lot of states are moving to it, and it seems to be working pretty well. And so maybe someday we'll see that here.
Well, we'll see.
Well, in Texas, every cycle,
there's nothing.
The maps have ended up in court. So, maybe this is better.
Yeah, well, we'll see. So what is happening now with the because people are wondering if we're going to have another round of pushed back primaries.
That's a possibility, depending on what happens. It's probably not most likely. The court does have a set of interim maps which it could use or tweak. So that sort of weighs against another delayed primary. But on the other hand, if the court decides that some fixes need to be made to the map and the attorney general or candidate for governor decides to appeal it again to the Supreme Court, it's possible that it could get delayed. And we're rapidly approaching the deadlines. I mean, people have to understand how quickly this stuff comes up.
Right. So just to talk about where we are right now. So we have these so-called temporary maps. And this was sort of a consolation because we were messing so much with redistricting in the federal courts, and we had run out of time with the primaries, pushed it back. And finally, the court said, just go with this. This will work for now. It may not pass constitutional muster with the Voting Rights Act, but... and now we have the Republicans want to make the temporary maps more, some little tweaks, more or less the permanent maps for the rest of the decade.
Yes, they want to adopt the temporary maps. I think in recognition that, as a practical matter, going into court and continuing to defend maps that were found to be full of intentional discrimination is probably not a good legal move. That they're not going very far. They're not going beyond that, and that's been a source of complaint.
So the Republicans are not, being very generous and saying, okay, let's be fair this time. I mean, they're playing the game. Well, they have to. If you're a Republican, you want your guys to defend your team. That's what they do. And so, but as soon as that happens, and if the courts approve these so-called, or these maps get approved by the legislature for sure, they're going to be challenged by groups like MALC, which is Trey Martinez Fisher, Representative Trey Martinez Fisher's organization. They've been very successful in challenging these, and LULAC and MILDEF and other Latino groups.
That's right. I mean, this is certainly not the end of litigation. The litigation over the last round of maps didn't end until 2006, and that was only a few years before we had to do it all over again. So this could well be going on for several more cycles, and it's one of the great epic battles, and it's what you have when you have a state that's changing as fast as Texas is.
Right. So we're going to have to tune in. This is not going to be the end of it at all. It's constant developments in redistricting. If you want to keep up with redistricting developments, the place to go online is txredistricting.org. That is the blog website for Michael Lee. He's an elections attorney, joined us this half hour on The Source. And or you can go to tpr.org. We'll continue to cover the issue as well. And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.